Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Jay Siemens back on the show. Jay is a lot of things. I could say he's a YouTuber, but that would definitely be selling him short. Jay is, he's an angler. He's a fantastic angler, so he can tell fishing stories. We can talk technical fishing, which we do. He's a content creator, but I mean, he's really is just an artist and a visionary, and leads the industry with digital content creation, absolutely. But he's just really... he's the all-around great guy. He's a husband and a father, and all those things just bundle up into just one great dude. And I just feel very fortunate to get some time with him to get caught up on these things. So this conversation, when it started, we had no limitations. Whatever Jay had going on, whatever we were going to talk about, was just going to happen on its own. And that's where we're at. So we cover a lot of great bases in this conversation, and touch on a lot of cool things. And Jay definitely lives a very interesting life, and as far as his career, and we talk all about it and get caught up in this interview. So no more introduction for this guy, Jay Siemens. Let's get to it. The fishing opportunities across the state of Montana are phenomenal. If you're from there or you've already been there a bunch to experience it, you know just how special these opportunities are. If you haven't, fishing out west should absolutely be on your bucket list. But aquatic invasive species like zebra mussels and Eurasian water milfoil can harm recreational opportunities. As boaters, as anglers, we have the ability to help protect Montana's waters by cleaning all mud, plants, and debris off our boat, recreational equipment, and fishing gear before we leave any access sites. Drain the water from your motor, your live well, your bilges, and allow your boat and equipment time to dry before your next outing. No matter what watercraft you use, please, if you're traveling in the state of Montana, stop at all inspection stations. Together, we can protect Montana's waters. Visit the link in the description of this podcast for more information. That's fwp.mt.gov/AIS. Zuloff Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zuloff Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zuloff Construction at their website, zuloffconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. Once again, I don't even recall, and I didn't even look. This is probably irresponsible of me, but I didn't even look before calling you when I had you on last. I just know that it's been long enough that you've done a lot of fishing since we talked, so we can get updated. I just want to get like an update on your season and just any of the fun, notable experiences that you've had this year. You know, any of your any of the content, any of the videos that you produce that you really, really like that we should talk about, or just maybe some behind the scenes stuff, just where you've been fishing, like literally anything that we should be updated on, man. Start wherever you want, because no topic is off limits right now. Open water, go ahead.
I love it. Thanks for having me again. Yeah, I don't know. This is probably maybe third time, fourth time. I'm not even sure, but yeah, it's been too long. But I think if it wasn't for videos and pictures of everything, I would forget what goes on, just because I have the memory of a goldfish. So I'm very thankful for videos, because I can look back and I'd be like, that's what I did this year, right? So even just looking back a couple months, I sometimes get anxiety, because I'm like, whoa, there's been, a lot of videos uploaded and a lot of trips and a lot of work that went into all of it, right? But it's been a crazy open water season already. I guess like my open water season, it kicked off going to Europe for Zander. It was something that had been on my list for a while. And it's like, if you're a walleye fisherman, you know what a Zander is, right? If you're a hardcore walleye fisherman, right? And it was funny. Like, I'd been following this kid on Instagram. I kept seeing his pictures pop up, and he just had these giant Zander. And I went to go send him a message, and he was following me and I'm following him. I'm like, okay, whatever. We've seen each other's stuff, and we start chatting. And I'm like, do you have any interest in, you know, hosting a Canadian to film a show? And he was all about it. Right. So it was, it's amazing how fishing it, you know, you can be from a different part of the world. I mean, he spoke really good English, but like, even if he didn't, it's just like, you can just get along right away. Right. We'd never chatted before. And all of a sudden we're spending 5 days together in a boat. So yeah, it was, I don't know if Denmark itself is necessarily known for the biggest Xander, but this kid Rasmus, that's his home country. And he's fished all over the place. He's fished all the other Scandinavian countries for Xander, but he had this lake in Denmark that was good for night fishing. And, man, I went in with these, you know, ideas that like, they're going to act just like walleyes. I'm going to bring, you know, a swim bait. I'm going to throw a jig and wrap all there. I'm going to be able to catch him. And it was so humbling seeing how different they fish for them there, how different they react and how different they are than a walleye. At least these big ones, they were so slow and lethargic and you had to get the bait just right. But once it's in the net, you're like, this just looks like a 20-pound walleye, but it's really not. It's like so different. So that was a good way to kick off the open water season.
Talking about fishing like overseas, you know, like we talk about destination trips, right? Where we're traveling 3 hours from home just to, you know, go from somewhere in the Midwest to a Canadian destination or whatever. But you, I mean, when you're going like overseas and all that, I'm so curious of like, and that was probably wasn't your, you know, that wasn't your first time ever like doing, you know, something overseas or just something exotic like that. But I'm just curious, like how much of the fishing over there was, you know, just maybe felt a little bit like riding a bike or, you know, some of the elements of, you know, just any of the decision making or the gear, the way it looked or whatever, like how much of it was, you know, seemed pretty familiar to you versus like, what were some of the things that were like by far the most different, like maybe something that was kind of a, like a total learning, you know, part of the experience. I guess I'm just kind of curious about that.
Well, yeah, there's a few different things that I'll touch on, but like when I'm in the boat, you know, he has an Alumacraft tiller just like me. He's got, you know, live scope on there and stuff. It feels like I'm fishing back home. That part felt the same, but it was kind of the other stuff that felt different. It was going into a tackle store in Denmark. Like I've spent probably a few years of my life in tackle stores in North America. And, you know, when I used to walk into a tackle store, I would like, when I was a kid, I would like start, you know, vibrating and get nervous and I'd pee a little bit because I'm just so excited to go into a tackle store. And that feeling has worn off. Now I'm just like, I've paid my dues in tackle stores. I've looked at everything possible. And obviously there's still new exciting stuff, but it's not like when I was a kid, right? That feeling came back to me when I walked into the tackle store in Denmark, because it was just like, everything was so different. All the brands that you're familiar with in North America, you go into a tackle store in Europe and it's like, I didn't even know they made these things. This is crazy. And just, it was surprising how different things were on the tackle side. So that was pretty cool just to go into a tackle store. And it was one of the biggest ones in Copenhagen. It was just cool. All the gear, all the different rods and reels and lures and stuff. And, you know, Europeans are a little different with their rigging. So how we caught a lot of the Xander was like with a fluke style bait with some European rigging, like those, you know, weights that break away and sliding trebles and that sort of stuff. So that part was a little different. And I guess the other part that really stuck with me is launching the boat and pulling the boat out at the end of the trip. It was this sketchy little beach. And one thing, not many people drive trucks around there. They get taxed heavily to drive trucks. So a lot of people just have like hatchback cars that they tow their boats with. But it's not fishing friendly in Europe. Like there are some places with nice boat ramps, but like a lot of the lakes, they have speed limits, you know, 7 to 10 miles an hour. They don't really have boat launches. A lot of the other lakes are private. So unless you're part of a club, you can't even fish them. And it just reminded me how good we have it up north here. Like the States is good, I think Canada even more so, for just having a lot of public land and boat ramps everywhere and not these private lakes. But it was just like, we have it so good as fishermen in the Midwest, in North America, compared to what they have. Like, not that they were anti-angling, it was just things were not set up as nicely if you're a fisherman in Europe, at least in Denmark. So that was pretty eye-opening.
Oh, man, yeah, that'd be, like, super interesting. And I suppose that's probably, like, a whole different conversation to have. There's probably, you know, with all that regulation and whatever. But one thing that I, you know, I try to consume, like, I'm addicted to YouTube. So, like, I consume stuff from all over the place. And I see how they rig those artificials over there, like a lot of that European content. I see how they rig those plastic baits over there. And it is really, really interesting to me. And I'm curious, you know, like you're somebody that experienced it and you understand fishing enough. You've done a lot of stuff. Like what is all goes into all of that? Like what is the advantage to what they're, the way they rig those baits? Like, why don't we do that over here for bigger predator fish? I mean, I think we do have some baits over here that are, you know, have a lot of those elements built in, but it's not like mainstream. Like if you watch YouTube for, say, you know, those European Zander or whatever, or if you watch, you know, pike content or big walleye content over here in North America, you know, you're just, it doesn't look, they're not rigging their baits the same consistently. I guess I'm curious a little bit about like that gear talk, like sort of that, that rigging element to that stuff over there.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that pike rigging, it just gives them a little more customization on some of that stuff for just like clipping weights onto the nose and different rigging harnesses. I think just pike fishing is so popular that they've just found good success with those, you know, breakaway type rigs where, you know, the hooks pull out of the plastic. And I think that's good. I've seen, you know, some of that transfer over to North America, but yeah, it just seems like there's more customization to a lot of it. And this pelagic style of fishing, I think how the lake's set up, there's a lot of this open water, you know, pelagic meaning open water fish, right? So these fish are just cruising around in the middle of nowhere. You know, if you're fishing a shield lake up north, those fish often, they will float out in the abyss, but a lot of the times there'll be some rock that they can hide in or they'll pull into shore. But with the lakes we're fishing, they're just these big sand bowls and the fish just, they can't hide and they float around. They float around in the deep. And that's why, like, it was amazing watching my guy just like a way that he could keep his rigging the same. So he had the weight the same. The treble all stayed the same, but then he would just quickly switch out plastics. I guess kind of like how we would change plastics on a jig. But he had caught so many Zander and he had seen their bite pressure and how often they wouldn't get a hook because they would grab down so hard that back treble hook wouldn't slide at all. So then he created this sliding rig. This was his own rig. It wasn't even a store-bought one that the back treble could slide when you set the hook, but it wouldn't slide when you're fishing with it. So man, I don't know. It was just their attention to detail is phenomenal. And, you know, after getting rejected by a lot of the fish on LiveScope and seeing these big fish staring at your baits, it's like, you have to be willing to adapt to these fish because not everybody's catching them. This Rasmus that we were fishing with, he definitely was on programs that other people weren't. So it was cool.
And I've heard that before too, that like there, a lot of the fish over there, a lot of the places are, it's like pressured fish. Like the big ones are pressured. Is there just a lot of anglers over there to pressure those fish, or is it just less water? So, you know, fewer anglers are pressuring these fish. Like what's the balance there? Just to kind of, I don't know, I guess I just, for my own self, I'm just curious about that.
I mean, in Denmark, definitely less lakes. And then, yeah, I would say less lakes, less fish. I mean, when you get into some of those situations where there are these carp lakes, obviously we weren't carp fishing, but there's carp lakes where they're pay to fish and people know what fish are in those lakes. They're like, hey, there's an 80-pound carp in this lake and everybody hears about it and they go try to catch it and stuff. So I think there's, you know, pressure in certain areas, but then like this Zander area we were fishing wasn't that pressured, but we also had to go out in the middle of the night to catch them. So that's not what people want to do either. Right. So it's, yeah, as a whole, I don't think fishing is as popular there, but there's definitely still pressure on the good lakes. And once again, like I loved it. It was amazing, but so thankful for what we have back home here. Like we have it so good as recreational anglers.
I got to talk Lake of the Woods with you. So maybe we take a sort of a hard turn kind of segue for me there to celebrate what we have here at home. You've had some experiences this year. I know you have. You fished a tournament. I know you did because
I did the Kenora Walleye Tournament.
Yeah. Tell me about that.
Yep. Well, historically I had fished the Kenora Walleye Open. It's the biggest walleye tournament on the north end of Lake of the Woods. And, the last few years I'd fished it with my wife, Samantha. And, I was on a trip to Eagle Lake this winter with Mr. John Hoyer. and we're chatting about schedules and summer and stuff. And I'm just like, John, you want to fish the walleye tournament with me on Lake of the Woods? And he's like, oh man, I'd love to. I'm like, yeah, I should check with my wife first before I give her the boot. So I texted Sam and I'm like, do you want to fish the walleye tournament this year? I might've found somebody else. And she's like, oh no, you like fish it with somebody else. That's fine. Like I've put Sam through hail and seasickness and all sorts of stuff the last few years of the walleye tournament. So she was like, you know, when she's a, you know, stay at home mom, she only gets so many days away, you know, without the kids. And, you know, 3-foot swells in a walleye tournament isn't necessarily her first choice when she gets a babysitter for 2 days, which is completely fair. So,
oh, I can relate to that.
Yeah.
Man.
So I brought in a ringer. I brought in John Hoyer, and you know, I obviously, if you guys aren't familiar with John, you could say he's the best walleye angler in the world. I mean, he won the Angler of the Year last year on the professional walleye trail and won a couple tournaments and stuff and won the first one this year. So, you know, every time I get a chance to fish with him, it's just like I'm watching so closely and learning so much, right? Because
yeah, and you guys have been buddies for a little while, right? Like you guys have been kind of buddies for a little while.
Yeah, we've known each other for, I'm trying to think, we probably fished together first. We've probably known each other for 7-8 years sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And fished a couple times, but not as much as we did, you know, during this walleye tournament, during the pre-fish in the tournament. But yeah, just you watch someone that walleye fishes all the time, and it's just amazing that the cadence and the attention to detail and everything that John does when he's walleye fishing. So it was cool to share with him Lake of the Woods. I was like, hey, John, I'm going to bring you to some areas where I think there's big fish. I have my own ideas, but I just kind of want to set you loose and let you do your thing. So yeah, sure enough, we brought John into some areas where I'm like, yeah, there's fish around here. I've got some spots. And then he picks it apart the way he does. And it was the best walleye fishing I had seen on Lake of the Woods. And it wasn't in one specific area. We, you know, visited 3 different parts of the lake, and everywhere we stopped, John caught a big fish. it was amazing to watch. So, I mean, this year was the first year that the walleye regulations were cut down on Lake of the Woods. So it was, which also affected the tournament. So in the past it was, I'm going to round these numbers cause I don't know the exact, measurements off the top of my head, but in the past it was 3 under 18 inches and you know, one bigger fish. But now this year it was 3 fish under, I think it's 16 and a half inches with the new slot, but one had to be over 27 and a half. So you couldn't keep any fish between basically 16 and a half and 27 and a half, which is a pretty crazy gap in there.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking too, I'm like, man, I wonder if teams are even going to catch, you know, 27 and a half, right? Like that's a really big fish. I think the first day, like half the teams in the field caught a fish over 27 and a half or close to half, whatever it was crazy. I'm trying to think. I think anglers are getting better. You add in front facing sonar and it's like teams are catching, you know, 5-6 fish over 28 inches in a day. How this tournament works, I guess I should have said, is it's catch photo release for the big fish, which I personally I'm a huge fan of. So it was, it changed a couple years back, but you weigh your slots and you catch photo release your big one,
okay.
Which I don't like messing with big fish in the live. Well, I mean, there was a cut, like things happen. Like if you fish enough tournaments, a fish is going to die in your live well eventually. So it's just like, it's such a good feeling taking the photo of the fish on the bump board, releasing it and not having that weird feeling of this fish that's, you know, with you all day, a big walleye too, right? Because they're big old fish on Lake of the Woods. So basically how it works is you catch, photo release your fish, and you send in your biggest one at the end of the day, basically. So you might upgrade it throughout the day, but you only send in your one fish at the end of the day.
Okay, that's cool.
So, I mean, it's fun. Yeah, so, I mean, our first day, first spot, we got, I'm trying to think exactly how big it was, a 29-incher. The second day, John's first cast, he catches a 29 and a half incher. And it was just like, it was ridiculous. Like it was, and we weren't the only ones doing that. There was other teams catching big fish, and the amount of 24s and 26s that were getting thrown back. And it's just like, the lake is in a really good place. And, you know, I'm curious what this new slot will affect things. Cause after what I've seen now, I'm just like, yeah, I didn't seem like the lake was in any sort of peril. It's like the fish were doing good. But all that being said, I think to win the tournament, the team that won, they got, I think it was like a 30.25 the first day and a 31.5 or something like that the second day with like perfect slots to fill it out. So it was like you needed to catch, I think it was a 30.5-inch average, you know, each day plus four perfect slots, you know, two each day. So,
oh man.
Three perfect slots. So yeah, it was impressive. It really showed off how good the walleye fishing is on the north end of Lake of the Woods. But also, I mean, you were talking about it, and I've been watching the you know, tournament results down south, and it seems like guys are whacking big fish on the south end too, on the big part.
Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. The fishing opportunities across the state of Montana are phenomenal. If you're from there or you've already been there a bunch to experience it, you know just how special these opportunities are. If you haven't, fishing out west should absolutely be on your bucket list. But aquatic invasive species like zebra mussels and Eurasian water milfoil can harm recreational opportunities. As boaters, as anglers, we have the ability to help protect Montana's waters by cleaning all mud, plants and debris off our boat, recreational equipment, and fishing gear before we leave any access sites. Drain the water from your motor, your live well, your bilges, and allow your boat and equipment time to dry before your next outing. No matter what watercraft you use, please, if you're traveling in the state of Montana, stop at all inspection stations. Together, we can protect Montana's waters. Visit the link in the description of this podcast for more information. That's fwp.mt.gov/AIS. Yeah, Lake of the Woods has been such a hot topic. I mean, it always is, right? Like it's its own like living thing in the industry. Lake of the Woods is just an absolute hub. You know, it's a capital. Yeah. It's a capital of all like destination walleye fisheries, you know, across anywhere in North America where walleyes live. Like Lake of the Woods is Lake of the Woods for so many reasons. So many different reasons for so many different people. I mean, it's just such a wonderful place, just a playground year round. But yeah, like more recently, the tournament guys with Forward Sonar have kind of, you know, started to figure some things out with some of the suspended fish roaming down in that South Basin, you know, on the Minnesota side. So we've been talking about that, and that's been, you know, that's definitely been a big one for sure. But not to, not to discount, you know, just the rich history that you have up there on the Ontario side. I think that's awesome. I'm curious. Now, I'm going to be interviewing John here in like 2 days. I'll ask him, I'm going to ask him the same thing. Fishing with John, for you, what was like the biggest thing that you took away from fishing that tournament with him? Like, what's the thing that you feel like is going to last the longest or have the biggest impression on you from a fishing standpoint, that is going to help you or that's going to be on the front of your mind for yourself, moving forward fishing without John?
I think John just taught me, attention to detail. Sometimes I feel like, you know, if it's color choice or cadence or some of that stuff, I'm like, oh, I'm in Canada. The fish are dumb. They're easy here, right? But like John has fished some of the most pressured waters in, you know, in the Twin Cities in that area. And he's just seen those subtle differences that will make a fish bite or not bite. So watching that and just trying to always get better at those skills and just, you know, those triggering characteristics. Like John just, he knows how to trigger walleye. He can see that fish on his electronics and knows what the best thing is. Like we were fishing side by side bobber fishing with a crawler, right? And I'm just like, how much science is there to bobber fishing with a crawler, right? You know, he outfished me 10-1. And he said jokingly, he's like, Jay, you know, I catch like probably like 1,000 walleyes a season on a bobber, right? And I'm just like, yeah, no, that's fair. I don't know what I'm doing, apparently. But like, I don't think I'm a hack, you know, walleye fishing.
No,
but
definitely not.
It, it's just like, it was, it's humbling, but it's good, right? It's just like, if you only fish by yourself or only fish with anglers that are less experienced than you, you're not going to get better. So it's like so important to humble yourself to become a better angler. May that be fish tournaments or you go get the John Hoyer experience. And it's like, John's a great teacher and, he's got the intensity and it makes me want to be, a better walleye angler.
Oh yeah. Or hiring a guide. Yeah. I think there's a whole topic around that. Like this podcast, literally like that's the nucleus. That's like the backbone of the purpose. I feel like for sure of every one of these shows is like just pressing the buttons, the learning buttons, like what are the fun memories? Like what are the fun experiences? We talk about it. We talk about the entertaining aspects to certain things, but it's like, what's the why? You know, it's like why do you learn? Like, why do you remember that experience over the other one? Well, you got to fit, you know, the fish bit or the fish were bigger. It's like, okay, well let's dig into that. Usually there's learning there. And yeah, like I think that's awesome, man. But you know, the other thing that I know about John is that you don't get there, you don't get to the level that he's on without being open-minded and learning things all the time too. And you think like if John's at the top, like who's going to teach him anything? John is awesome at learning stuff. Like that dude is like if there's one expertise that he has, it's the learning. Like his learning curve is faster than everybody else's. So like, yeah, I love talking to him about how he learns stuff and builds confidence in things because it's like, it's just outrageous. Like just his ability to learn is just outrageous.
Oh, he's dedicated his life to learning as much. And if you get into a conversation with him about the biology of a walleye, and if that happens on the podcast, he will start citing articles from here and there and everywhere. And it's just like, if there's walleye literature out there, he's read it. If there's a tournament that happened on Devil's Lake, he will tell you where that tournament was won and what color jig the guy was using. And like, it's amazing. And I love that. He's a good guy. I had a lot of fun. So, and the thing too, is just like, you can soak up so much from somebody following them on social media and watching their videos and, you know,
absolutely.
But to actually be in the boat, there's things that you can't explain until you're in the boat and just see how, you know, how somebody does something, right? Because it's as well as an article might be written or video might be filmed. It's like, you sometimes just need to be there and be a fly on the wall to see how it goes down. So,
yeah, man.
So yeah, it was fun being net man for John, and I was able to catch a couple scraps that he left. So yeah, we finished ninth, and that's actually going to be I don't know when this podcast is coming out, but it'll be very close to releasing at the same time. So that's,
oh, cool.
That's one of my next videos coming up. So if you guys want to see some walleyes getting caught by John and myself, it'll be on YouTube shortly.
You know, some of the other super fun videos that you've been making for years. I mean, not even to go back and talk about like 39 hours and all that stuff, but even like some of these fun videos that you guys still continue to put out, you know, the little competition videos, you know, like where all that sort of thing. I'm so curious about that. Like I haven't asked any of the YouTubers. I don't think I've had anybody on that I could ask. Like my question just being, you know, around that kind of content, just how much fun it is for you. But also, you know, why is that so popular? Cause it is, it's like people love watching you either compete against your buddies or just fishing in some type of a tournament, like the kayak tournaments that you fish, you know, Aaron's putting out those videos and, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. Like I'm curious about that. Like for you, where that kind of stacks up on sort of your favorite list of content that you produce and what is so fun about it and any of the personal experiences, you know, specifically to any of these videos that would just be fun to talk about, man.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, when I get a chance to talk to people who watch the videos, it's amazing how often the competitions get brought up. And it's funny too, cause the competitions are like the most work to produce and make like 39 hours that's like on the upper end of it. Right.
Yeah.
But the amount of comments and questions we get when the next 39 hours is, it's just like, okay, well, that hit a chord with people. And I remember when 39 hours, this was when season two was dropping. or it might have been season one. I don't even remember. But I just remember I had friends that were not fishermen or like kind of fishermen, but I didn't even know they watched YouTube fishing or consume any content. And they were like, man, this 3 hours, like I'm hooked on it. And I'm like, I didn't even know you watch fishing stuff, but it I'm not saying that all these competitions do, but it has the potential to kind of break through and bring a newer audience in. Cause it's like, if you watch a technical in-depth fishing video, it can be a little overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about like a 3 hours is you got to follow a scoreboard, right? It's like, hey, the score is 3-2 and we're going to cheer for, you know, the Toronto team or the Manitoba team or the Saskatchewan team. So I think people like to cheer. They like to have a reason to watch, just like people cheer for a sports team, right? It's just like one extra reason to get excited or to put you on the edge of your seat. You know, for myself, why I like the competitions too is like, you know, if you fish a big competitive tournament like the Kanawha Open or the KBI, the Kanawha Bass International, or one of these big ones, there's just a different level of stress. And maybe, you know, you're fishing it with somebody you really like, but there's a lot of strangers at that event. The cool thing about doing these derbies is like, we make it exactly how we want it, right? We can pick six of our friends and we can do it all at the same location or different locations, or make a video and it can be playful, or there could be a charity involved or whatever. But just being able to curate it exactly how you want. And it's just like, I don't know. I really appreciate those moments that I can do this stuff with my friends and it makes memories. And it's like, it still stings when I lose. Like if I'm doing a video, you know, and my buddy Tara's in Toronto and I'm back in Kenora and we're fishing against each other, even though it's like the lowest stakes possible and there's nothing, it's just, it still stings when you lose. And that was like the last one with Tara. But then it's just like, okay, well, I didn't pay $1,000 entry to this tournament. I didn't break any gear because I didn't, you know, run wide open unnecessarily. And it's just like, so I still do like tournaments and I'm not the best at them, but I do like doing, you know, legit tournaments. But I like making videos out of it. I like making videos more than I like fishing tournaments. So that's where it's like, I want to keep making these. And that's kind of a good segue to, I've spoke to it a little bit and maybe on one podcast, but we can let the cat out of the bag a little bit. But there's a new series that we shot, and we actually have 2 seasons shot of it already.
Oh,
which is kind of wild to think about. But it's basically, you think about 39 hours and how people are spread across. For those of you that aren't familiar with 39 hours, it was a competition where there's people spread across kind of North America competing against each other, multi-species. This one now is called The Outpost, and it's everybody at the same location. So there's some familiar characters, some new characters, but we filmed 1 season at my outpost, Uncle Mark's outpost on Lake of the Woods. And we filmed 1 season up in northern Manitoba at an outpost out of Gangler's Lodge. And yeah, so those are getting edited right now. We had like, you know, we got 2 guys editing them, and I'm chipping in, and It's going to be coming out. Well, season 1 is open water and season 2 is ice fishing. So they'll be coming out starting probably end of September, October, but I haven't really put anything online yet, but that's, you guys heard it here first on the JMO podcast.
Dude, that just sounds so awesome. You see so many of these videos out there and you know, like these competition videos, right? The whole topic, but I think you're spot on. That's very insightful. You know, who better to know these things, but like, you know, the fact that it can bring in a new, you know, just more audience, or, you know, just have better retention rates and just make a positive impact. And it's not about being like viral, or, you know, it's not about being, you know, you don't have to be like all opinionated. Like a lot of people think they got to get for clicks and views or whatever. The competition is just so fun, and it's all about positivity and giving you, you know, picking a team and rooting for them or whatever. You know, I like all that stuff, but I just always thought about that because I like that stuff. Like I couldn't even answer that question better for myself.
I think, you know, something that I've kind of leaned on more so in, you know, the last year or two of making videos. And I guess it's probably a little easier to say when I've got, you know, backing of sponsors and I've a loyal, you know, crew of people to watch the videos. But it's like, I don't want to do the sensational stuff to because that stuff isn't going to give you longevity necessarily in a career. And it's like, I also want to make the stuff that I want to watch, right? So it's like, I like the cinematic filmy style videos and I want to make those videos. And is it going to be as viral as, you know, a Hot Topic? You know, maybe not, but at the end of the day, it's like, well, who am I making the videos for? And I want to be proud of what I make and I want it to be stuff that I'd want to watch. So it's like, that's the same thing with like those competitions. It's like, I want to watch competitions. If you go on YouTube, there's a ton of really good competitions in Europe, but in the multi-species world, there really is not much for competitions in North America. So it's something that, I think there's definitely room for. But you go to Europe and there's like three or four different, you know, well produced series like Fly versus Jerk, European Fishing League. And I watch that and I'm like, I don't know why that hasn't translated. You know, obviously we've got Bassmaster and you know, Major League Fishing, and John Hoyer's been doing a great job with Tour Level Gold, but it doesn't seem like, you know, I feel like there could be more here. Like there's more room for it.
Ultimately, it's always better for the industry when there's more of them. You know, if you, yeah, everybody wants to be like have some original idea and be the only person out there, that's like one of the toughest ways to make it, you know, in the media content world. Yeah. Like, it's like the best thing that could happen is if other people had really good ideas and they executed them really well and we all had more options. It would just bring more people to the table. And so, yeah, I like promoting it, talking about it like this. And it's like, man, if somebody else is out there, some young YouTuber's got a handful of buddies, like, man, by all means, dude, put together a good idea and plan it out. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you have some advice for somebody, like if we got to get some more people into doing this.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, people, they get intimidated by the big projects or by the big dreams or goals and stuff. And it's just, I'm just picturing from season 2 of 39 Hours and being like, wow, this was such a massive, or even season 1, I was, you know, part of filming. But it's just like all these things that seem like, why am I doing this? Is such a massive undertaking. And then you step back afterwards and it's like, I'm more proud of that than any other project. Like that has just coincided so many times with events in my life of building Uncle Mark's Outpost and being like, wow, that was the toughest thing I've ever done. Or, you know, just building a YouTube channel from the ground up. It's like, wow, that was the toughest thing I've done. But then you get the rewards later. So I think for anyone that has an idea, if they want to start a YouTube channel or they want to start a tackle brand or they want to start a guiding business, it's just like, man, you just need to take, I mean, not to get too motivational, but it's just like, I've had so many of these conversations with people and being like, yeah, just do it. Just give it a shot. And not saying it's for sure going to work, but the worst thing that happens is it takes you longer or it doesn't work out and you find that you're calling somewhere else. But yeah, I think just, you know, if you have that competition you want to film or that YouTube channel you want to start, just do it. Don't think about it too much at a certain point.
Yeah.
You got to make it happen. So,
yeah, man, you cleared 200,000 subscribers on YouTube. So,
I don't know. I was just saying to my wife, Sam, today, I was like, man, my life has not been normal since 2011. That's when Uncut Angling started with Aaron.
Yeah.
And it was like, since that launched and it's been a wild ride. Cause that was like the start of YouTube stuff and people starting to watch more YouTube and YouTube fishing and all that. And it's just like, yeah, it's been very, very blessed to do this. And I pinch myself all the time still. And I'm just like pumped. People are watching the videos and it makes me want to make the next one. And things are, yeah, I'm so excited for these competitions. Like just hearing your love for the competitions and it's just like, editor Brandon, he does the majority of my editing and he's just like, he's excited. I can feel him buzzing when I'm talking to him about the competition and stuff. And he sends me clips and it's like, there's going to be some wild stuff. So it's going to be good. I mean, like I do like making the videos to, you know, watch them back for myself and all that stuff, but just if they can bring people some excitement, it'll be good. So yeah, a couple of weeks away on that. And then we'll start with the open water season first and then the ice fishing one. People are going to be confused. People sometimes get confused on YouTube thinking it's all chronological, but the open water one will come first, which was filmed this spring, and then the ice fishing one will come probably in November. So
yeah,
get people revved up for ice season. And hopefully we have a better ice season because I know in the Midwest it was pretty pretty catastrophic for lack of ice. I'm not sure where, how it was in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was really an abbreviated season, but more than that, there was opportunity out there to go fishing, even with a shorter season. But yeah, just the lack of ice to where, you know, a lot of people rely on driving pickups, or they have hard-sided shacks, sleeper shacks, right? You come down here to the Midwest.
Yep.
You know, you see a lot of that. So that all that stuff took a really big hit. Hopefully this year it is a little different. Just industry stand, you know, industry conversation. Yes, a lot of the companies, just everybody in general, you know, just the ice fishing community. I'm sure it's the same up there too. It's like not everybody fishes both ice and open water. A lot of people don't have a boat or whatever it is, or whatever their job is. It's just more time in the winter. It just seems like that winter participation, it's tough on the industry when you don't get a good ice season. So yeah, we're hoping for one for sure. But yeah, dude, I love the content you're promoting there, man. That's so awesome. Definitely be looking forward to it. And yeah, like I said, I couldn't even explain to you better. Like, you just explained why I like watching the competition videos that you put out better than I would have explained it myself. But it's like, yeah, there's just something there where I just can't wait for the next one to come out, because the last one's just still, you know, stuck in my mind. I'm just rooting. I'm just anticipating, and the editing, so much goes into that, man. So I definitely appreciate how you guys put it together.
Now, well, thank you. I got a good crew helping me out. It's definitely not a one man show. And I think people are going to like the vibe of, you know, everybody in these competitions staying in the same location. It's just fun. It's just like buddies hanging out. And, you know, some pranks being played and just yeah, it'll be good.
I wanted to spend a little bit of time getting back on that Lake of the Woods topic and some, you know, you've kind of mentioned it before. We talked about it one of the last times you were on, but I want to get an update on your fishing lodge on Lake of the Woods. I don't know. I haven't seen one of your videos in a little while, sort of bringing that to light. And maybe it's so booked up you don't even want to talk about it or bring it any attention to it.
Well, no. I mean, it is. Yeah, you're correct. I haven't made a video. I filmed the first half of the video opening up the cabin this spring. And it's just, I mean, this is our second year. And last year we were probably at, I don't know, you know, 50% capacity. And this year, all of a sudden we're at 80-90% capacity. Like it got very busy very quickly, and I guess people catch on to it, and people are, you know, with any fishing lodge, the best is having, you know, repeat customers, right? And last year, pretty much, you know, we had some repeats, and this year we've had a bunch of people and they already want to book it. So it's like, it's the best case scenario, but it's also like, now I don't have time to stay down there, but it is also important for us to fill it up. You know, kind of the shoulder seasons, like late fall, there's some time there. But you know, the first year was like, last year was the first year in working out some of the kinks and learning the solar system and that whole off-grid thing. And this year it's been, we haven't had any major issues, which is good, right? So I've had to you know, run down there a couple times if things were forgotten, if there was, you know, some sort of minor issue. But yeah, it's good. I'm excited to get back there. I might try to get down there this fall and shoot a deer in that part of the lake, just to do it down in the lake. Our partner Spencer, he's one of the guys that built the outpost with us, and he shot a mega buck down there, like one of the bigger ones that I saw in Northwest Ontario this last fall. So that kind of gets me excited to do some deer hunting down there. And that's another thing we want to do, is we want to run hunts out of there. So we have some deer hunts coming there, hunters coming there this fall, and hopefully something we can do, you know, more of. But
like, how big of a, how many beds do you have? Again, you have to remind me on some of that stuff. And then just to kind of talk about the fishing, like the season, you know, the shoulder season that's right ahead of us, right? Like, no better topic to talk about is like fall fishing. I mean, you're like, this is Lake of the Woods. Like, it's not just walleyes. Like, you're in muskie country.
We've seen muskies spawning off of our dock. Like, you can catch big bass off the dock. There were some guests earlier this year, and they said they had their best walleye fishing of their lives off the dock the one evening. I don't know how many walleyes they caught, but they said they caught like a 25 or 26 incher off the dock. And, you know, it's just in a sweet spot for everything there, like muskies, bass, walleye, pike sort of thing. But, yeah, so the cabinet's got 5 beds up in the loft, and then a master bed and, in the master bedroom, and then like a hide to bed type deal. So you can sleep. There's groups of like 9 people that stay there. and, you know, docking for, you know, 420-foot boats there. And it's a sweet spot. It's like either you leave from the northwest angle, or you leave from Kenora, and it's pretty much the same distance either way, or you can leave from Sioux Narrows on the east side there, and it's maybe a little bit further. But it's just like once you get down there, it is so quiet. And there's, you know, there's other cabins in the vicinity and other resorts around, but it's pretty quiet. We're tucked away in this little bay. And, you know, with most fishing lodges, it's June, July, August. That's like the busiest time, right? June, July is when everybody thinks the fishing's the best and that's when they want to be there. But it's like you roll into September, October, and that's my favorite time on Lake of the Woods because everyone goes back to school. You know, hunting season's open too if you want to do some waterfowl hunting or grouse hunting part of your fishing day. And I mean, yeah, it's beautiful out there when the leaves start to change. So I mean, I'm a fan of the fall time, and you can just do it all. It's so sweet when the lake quiets down and you go walleye fish in the morning and muskie fish in the afternoon and not see another boat.
How late do you plan on staying open, like for the season? Do you just wait for the weather to tell you you need to start closing the doors, or do you guys draw a line somewhere?
Well, yeah, it's tough to say. Probably like once you get to mid-November, that's pretty touch and go. But like early November basically is when our last potential group would be. So I would say probably before November 10th or something like that, it would be shut down. But, you know, I think it was the year that we built the cabin, Spencer was staying down there and doing some hunting. And there's a video clip that people have mentioned a few times. They think is hilarious, but it's him chainsawing around the boat because the bay froze and he had to chainsaw all the way around the Stanley, around the work boat to get it out. And he made it out, but he shouldn't have stayed any more days after that. That's for sure.
No, man, that's awesome. Yeah. I like, you know, just kind of giving that a little bit of love because that was such a, you know, it's just such a cool, such a cool video series that you put together and what a cool life experience that was. It's just a very unique and just, you know, for all of us fans, it's just sort of a, you know, just an interesting, very personal, you know, like series that you put together. And so for nothing else, I just, when I don't see what's going on there, you know, I got to ask you those questions. Yeah. Cause it's pretty interesting and pretty cool, pretty fun. So I like getting good updates that it's going well, but yeah, man.
Well, like, yeah, thank you. And that does make me feel like, you know, I had whatever it was, 27, I don't know what it is, 27 chapter videos, 27 videos updating the outpost. And now all of a sudden it's like silence for a year. So I understand that you know, I think I owe the people that were following up until then a little bit of an update, but it's just cool. It's cool that people get to go up there and like, I don't know. When I was up there, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I just sat down and flipped through the guest book and it's like, man, these people got to experience my favorite lake on earth. And I'm so pumped that I could be a part of that in some way, because it's like, I didn't grow up on Lake of the Woods. I grew up, you know, 3-4 hours away, and I would drive. I would leave at 3 a.m. to make it here for sunrise and, you know, be home at midnight, fish for one day. And it was worth my time to just go fish Lake of the Woods. So now like it being in my backyard and people driving from Wyoming and I think there's people from California there this summer and Colorado and all over the place. And calling it their summer vacation is like cool. Cause I realize how special Lake of the Woods is.
I suppose they get all this information when they inquire for it, but like whereabouts, you know, if it, you know, the drive to the destination, like how you get there.
We haven't posted the exact location on the internet to keep it just, you know, private for people. So we respect people's privacy, right, on where it is. Cause we have people that recognize it and they'll come and, you know, come take a look and whatever. So, I mean, basically it's in the central part of Lake of the Woods and there's a couple options. Like people can boat from the northwest angle, or there's a shuttle. The cool thing about the outpost too, that we did is we got some fishing kayaks and canoes. So it's like, we've had crews there that don't have any of their own boats. They can hire us to shuttle them down. We shuttle them down from Kenora and they've got 4 pedal drive fishing kayaks and like a 12-foot, big square stern canoe with a trolling motor. So it's like, you don't need to have a boat to go stay at the outpost. And that's been cool to have some different groups there, right? We've had groups that aren't even a fishing crew. They were just paddlers. They liked to canoe and kayak and they went down there and that was their trip, was just paddling around the area. You know, a lot of people bring their own boats. I would say that's the most common, kind of like kind of like a do-it-yourself Airbnb style. But yeah, like our last group boated from Sioux Narrows, and the other group might come from town or might get shuttled. But yeah, if you go to UncleMarksOutpost.com, then got all the info and some pictures, and we're not booking next year quite yet. But I mean, if somebody wants to do a last minute fall musky trip, there are a couple of weeks available, and we can set people up with guides if they want. I haven't come out of guiding retirement yet. I'm not sure if that'll happen, but who knows? Maybe my arm can get twisted.
Oh man, fall musky though.
Yeah,
fall musky. It'd have to be right up there, especially talking about that part of the world, man. Oh, dude.
Yeah. It's a place to do some fall musky fishing.
That being said, dude, let's just wrap this up. We'll do an ending. We'll get to bed. I apologize for the late night, but I do wildly appreciate the time, brother, and always do. And so that being said, I would say there can't possibly be one person listening to this that isn't following you on social media or your YouTube. But in the event that there is one person out there, tell people if they have any questions or if they ever just want to follow along on your content or any other content that you want to promote or anything, any sort of ending thoughts, man. This is kind of how I always end these things. So go ahead.
No, I just, if people want to follow along with the adventures, you can go to YouTube and punch in my name, and I try to keep fishing fun, not take it too serious, and hopefully teach something along the way. And right now the plan is just to keep making videos and to having fun while doing it. And I'm excited for these competitions to drop. That's probably what's on my mind the most these days, is just getting the competition out and hopefully getting some new people into the sport.
I think that's a big part of this conversation, this whole podcast that we did. You know, we just kind of felt our way through it, but I'm really excited that we talked about that and gave that topic a little bit of love, because I like that description. A lot of people probably agree, or just, you know, sort of validates, you know, a lot of people that watch your content or anybody else is out there with those competition videos. It's just sort of interesting. It's like, why do we like those so much? Why are they so popular? Why is there so many of them? But they look like fun. It's very, you see the personal side of things. You see the personalities of people come out, especially when it's not just like a 1 or 2 hours of fishing to make a video. It's like when we see you get a little strung out and maybe it's day 2 or day 3, it's like, those are really fun, 'cause then you're really seeing the personal side, of it all. But also, just witnessing good fishing, you know, just great video of good fishing going on. There's always something you can learn from visually, and then of course, you know, breaking down the technical stuff, of course. But I love it all. I take it all in. So you got me hyped too. I'm really glad that you're able to announce that, and we'll be looking out for it. We'll share it for sure when it comes out.
Thanks,
man. So yeah, dude, well, I thank you very much for the time, and I'll let you back to it, man.
Yeah, man, it was good chatting.
Keep crushing, man.
Thanks for making it happen. All right, have a good one.
Later, man.